You're listening to Season 6 of MGIF, a video game podcast where you listen to me walking around mostly London, having fun, silly chats with people who are involved with or have an interest in video games in one way or another. If, by chance, this gets you thinking about video game culture and its wider place in society, that is not my fault. This week we have a returning guest, the fantastic, fabulous Mr. Masood Amilas. Masood is a stand-up, he's a comedy writer, he does voice acting. You may have heard the Mystery on the Rocks podcast he does with Chris Stokes and Suze Kempner. He's a very talented boy, jam-packed with charisma, and you get to hear him once more on this podcast. Aren't you lucky? We met up in our favourite coffee place and grabbed a coffee before going for a stroll around Soho and sitting down in a park in the beautiful London sunshine. It was a lovely day. And we talked about working creatively within limits, writing and the creative process, writing for stand-up, art house films and when they go too far, indie art games and what's interesting to us in that field right now, as well as other gaming in chat and just going around the houses having a lovely old time. And you can have that lovely time too by coming along with us. Season 6, Episode 14, it's Masood Amilas. Just to continue to make this podcast even more London-centric, I'm back in Soho. Gonna meet my boy, Mr. Masood Amilas. I'm gonna go for a coffee in a posh coffee place because we are wankers. It's really nice today, 16 degrees. Quarter past ten.
No, there's nobody
on. Going past the FOP record shop. Right, we're nearly in position. Let's see if I can see my guy. He might be inside already. He might have secured us a seat. Let's go and find Mr. Masood Amilas right now. Headbutting the lights because I'm tall.
No,
it's fine.
I know what I'd like.
Do you know what you want?
Yes, I'd like an iced latte, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Lovely.
Can I have a long black?
For the long blacks, we usually just use the more espresso blend because it's espresso based.
Oh, okay.
If you wanted a filter, you can choose any of those.
I'll go filter, yeah.
Filter, lovely.
Could I have the...
Yeah.
Oh, let me decide between...
It's tricky, isn't it?
Let's say...
Futures on
solids
tasting really
sweet.
If you're, like, looking at those...
Oh, that sounds nice.
Yes, because I always get the same two, and I'm going to change.
I want to go, yeah.
Going to do it. Yes, yeah, the Futures on solids sounds great, yes, please.
Bam.
Thank you. Are we on? We are. Flame on! I'm gone! That just went through my head.
Which one?
Beastie Boys, isn't it? Flame on! I'm gone!
My favorite is...
I can't remember what song it is.
After inter...
Body moving.
There's a guy at the end, he's like...
Body moving.
Going to a church, I'm faster than Spock. The Kid Rock. Ain't nobody here like the K-O-D-D-D. You hear that, man? I'm telling you. With the echo, oh, I'm telling you, man.
Like, yeah, man, that's probably how the song started.
I love that. I wonder who started that sort of thing. You know, you have someone at the end of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, what's that Jurassic 5 song? J5 MCs.
Oh, yeah.
And then that guy comes, that kid comes in at the end.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's like, but like, they don't, they just drop the beat. He's like, yo, I need a beat. I need a beat. And like just people saying, because it starts him saying, I want to be on the album.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know about that.
funny. Just like those bits those around.
Little, those are sort of like proto...
No or leaving in bits of, oh, let's do this, let's do that. Like, Justifo used to do it all the time, where they were like leaving in bits of the process.
Yeah.
Right? To be like, look at this, we're writers, we're songwriters.
And it's because it's not quite skit territory. Oh, let's make this one. But it's like, it's just, yeah, it's just part of the recording. They're like, oh, that's funny, yeah, let's put that in.
Yeah, skit territory is like MF Doom's. Yeah, 4-minute compilations. Oh, yeah. Once you've heard it once, you're like, oh, yeah. I did enjoy that, but I'm not going to listen to it again.
Yeah.
There's just loads of samples from old Marvel and DC.
You know what? I absolutely love those, though.
Oh, yeah, I do.
So, like, my favorite one is definitely, it's like, what is it? It's like, oh, that's it. And here's Doom's jet, right on time.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, why is it so cold down here?
Yeah.
Well, the heat went off in the whole building. Well, it's plenty warm out there on Long Island with Doom. Doom? Here in New York?
Yeah.
Yes, I've heard he's got an amazing new machine.
Yes.
But I love it. I love all that stuff. It's like, how long is this all going to take, Doom? I advise you not to repeat that error. I know what you mean.
It's really, really good.
It's just so... Cause, and then I went and watched all those old cartoons, right? So I watched the one where it's like... Where you are going, there are no jokes. And he throws him out of the plane. He goes, wow, I'm beginning to think that armor-plated gargoyle doesn't like me.
Yeah. Yes, that's one of my favorites. Such a good sample as well. It's a good line.
Yeah, it's great.
It's a great line, delivered really well.
Dude, I should have brought my autograph book. Your attempts at humor bore me.
And it's funny, like, those, because you sort of associate that with a lot of modern Hollywood style of talking and
yes.
writing. Right? But actually, that's, it sort of has its origins in those really old cartoons, right? Which seems a bit more charming and less grating.
Well, it does.
I don't know whether it's just a nostalgic glasses on thing. You know, it's better then, but,
well,
you know.
So I've been watching that X-Men 97 cartoon,
which
is nuts, by the way.
Yes, I love it, man.
I love it. It's incredible, right?
My favorite one to jump in is the Gambit one. Gambit origin story, where it's the Thief and the Assassins rival guilds and stuff, and he goes back home and...
That's crazy.
I'm not a thief nor an assassin. I'm Gambit. I'm an X-Men, and I'm never coming back. And he gives her the ring, and she starts crying, and I'm like, this is like pure soap opera shit. I love it.
But, like, have
anyway,
you watched the newer series that they've just released?
No.
That's nuts.
Is it?
It's great. It's really good. And, like, it's really weird because it's sort of... There's some modern things in it. Or maybe it was just always written like that. I'm not sure. But, like, some... I mean, like, yo, that show, like, it hits hard.
Oh,
it hits
like,
and then it hits hard.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, like... But the thing is, like, I don't have much nostalgia for that show.
Right.
I watched, like, maybe 3 episodes as a kid.
Okay.
And then I've just been watching this one, and I'm like, oh no, this is just good. Like, there's a lot of people going like, oh, it's rose tinted glasses, it's nostalgia. It's like, is it cashing in? Is it actually good? I'm like, no, it passes the test. It's got
yes.
it. It's got it. It's got the writing, and it's fun. And but it also has that really earnestly, you know, like Cyclops, just like, well, you should have said that before we, you know, that
yeah,
kind of like,
yeah,
very earnest kind of. Hands on hips, shirt tucked in, Scott Summers.
Yeah.
You know.
I feel sorry for Jubilee, like, coming up in the age of the sort of the 90s hyper-masculine era where like, oh, she's just a girl that can fire fireworks and it doesn't hurt anyone.
Like
at best, she sort of puts one of the bad guys off for a bit.
Yeah, like, ugh.
Like, yeah, ugh, stop it.
It
gives them, like, 10 seconds to, like, do something else. Like, you're the proper X-Men to, like, fire their good shit.
It's like, and then it turns out that actually, because she's so young, like, later on, actually really, really useful.
Yeah,
like, when
yeah.
she gets older, she's incredible. But then,
yeah.
obviously, back then, they're like, ah, I don't know, fireworks.
Yeah, fucking fireworks.
There's a little joke in this newer series where she goes, like, she falls off a building and says, how come everyone can fly except me? And you're like, oh, yeah. Because they just kind of just gave a bunch of people flying.
Yeah.
And then she's like, wow, how come I don't get to fly? This is bullshit.
That's good. We always used to have a running joke, which I think... So I haven't really watched much of it, but my daughter did watch for a bit My Hero Academia.
Oh, I know.
And
the vibe
of that is everyone's got, like, nearly everyone in the world is born with some sort of power.
Yeah.
Like, they might be shit ones, but, like, everyone's got something. And some people have amazing ones, some people have shit ones. There's a guy who's got none. He's, like, the main character, right? That's the whole vibe of it, you know? But we used to have a running joke about, like, in X-Men, if, like, there were loads and loads of mutants around.
Yeah.
What about all the ones with, like, a really underwhelming power? Like,
oh, yeah.
And I used to think, like, what, the inability to be sunburnt. right? Something like
never
that.
Never wear sunscreen. He's always like, great, but he's like, that's all I got.
Yeah, yeah, that's it.
That's it.
It's like, oh, we've got a really important mission in Rio de Janeiro.
He's like, hey, I'm your
but
guy.
It's the height of summer. Leave this to me.
Bring Tan Man. He's like, yeah. All right. Pops out. He's like, hey, what's up? We need somebody who looks like they're tanned all the time, but doesn't. It's a very specific mission. That, like, him what being suntan is super important for some reason.
He had the worst costume. What would it even fucking be? Just like.
He wears a Hawaiian shirt.
Swim shorts.
Swim shorts.
And a duck, like and a rubber, oh, yeah, duck rubber ring duck around him. Yeah.
He's just like, hey.
It's like, you got to change our outfit, man.
Come on. Everyone knows our outfits, and they know your outfit because of it. Like, we can't do any undercover work because you got that stupid rubber ring on. Even we change it up sometimes.
And I know this is a Superman thing, but apart from anything, you can't get changed in a phone booth.
Yeah, you can.
Because the ring just kind of pushes the door out, and you're halfway, your dick's out, man.
You just hear rubber, like, scraping against the yeah. Oh, come on.
Come on.
Come on. It's, sir, you can't. Sir, your penis is out. Sir, you can't. Sir, this is a public space, sir. Shut up, I'm getting changed. Suntan, just a minute. Suntan.
Meanwhile, everything's kicked off without him, and it's just done. Things are done.
Well, everything was going to be fine. We were going to meet this man who looked very tan with a shirt on, but now he's not here. Magneto's going to blow up the Earth for some reason.
Yeah, we're furious. We've been stood up.
Hang on a second. You mean to tell me the reasoning behind almost all of our encounters is because we stood you up? Yeah, it's kind of the sum of it. I really don't like being stood up. You, the master of metal.
The villain origin story.
So petty?
he's so obsessed with being on time.
He's just standing there like...
He's got hundreds of watches on him and stuff. That is a good villain origin story.
There is a villain in Batman called the Clock King.
Of course there is.
And he is... very much that
did guy. He get stood up? It's well, like an incel that got stood up by a date.
Well, that's what happens in the cartoon.
I was
right?
Joking.
His origin is he goes to a he's like late for work.
Right.
Oh no, that's it. No, he's on time all the time.
Yeah.
And someone goes, oh hey, you should just take it easy, man. You know what? Take a break. Go down to the park and take a break. So he takes a break at work.
Yeah.
And then, like, basically a farcical series of events happen which make him late. And he ends up getting fired and he has, like, a freak out and he ends up going to jail for something, like, really petty. And then he becomes the Clock King. But he bases all of his crimes around time and perfect timing. And, like, there's one thing where he escapes where he's standing on a bridge and he goes, like, I'll tell you one thing about this town. Is the 803 is always exactly 3 minutes late. And he falls off this bridge. And I was like, what? And then he's like on top of the train. As it zooms off, he's like,
that's amazing. That's really good.
It's almost like him and Calendar Man are like two jokey villains.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like Calendar Man's like, I only do crimes on certain days. You're like, who is this fucking loser?
Imagine him doing that in London and he hasn't checked the fucking... the route finder app and it's like, oh, there's severe delays and everything. He just fucking falls on the track.
Train runs him over.
Because it's different every fucking day.
Yeah, Batman's like, no. We always know that the 805 is late, but... Oh, man.
You didn't check your app?
He dies and he's just like...
Killed by TFL.
So sad. Yeah, his family, like, then they become, like, the Clock family to avenge his death. And they're just like, why didn't you tell him, Batman? The train was like, tried.
Yes, I was explaining to my partner that my PC upgrade is important because, you know, it's for work.
Yeah.
It's going to really help.
Yeah.
The, you know, the processing of video and photography, like having that extra oomph now, especially with the new camera, you need more stuff in that. I can't be there waiting for things to load in. You know, it's for that, right?
Right.
So, yeah, fine. Okay, that makes sense. You know, it's a business expense, you know. I've had some jobs in. It's good. It's important to do it now. The time to strike is now. Big serious face on me, like, yeah. Turns up 2 days later, this massive cardboard box, you know, big package parcel. On the top, it's like, game, stream, create dream, gamer, PC.
And you're like,
on the side, it's like, your battle box awaits. And I'm like, for fuck, did you have to do me like
that? Yeah, come on. Like, do you have any idea how long it took me to convince... my partner that this was a sound business investment. Yeah. It's like,
And then I'm just there like, look how well it runs Doom Eternal.
Really, huh? It's better than the, yeah, no, it is better than the PS5. That is marginally better. And
no,
I
we
guess
can't get rid
no,
of it. No.
There's what no, there's no blur. Have you, I've seen you up here a lot. Have you done any, can you show me some of the work you've done? It's on its way in. I've got a couple of meetings. I've got to do a recce. Do you even know what those words mean?
You're just thinking of important sounding words to say in a row. No.
I've got to do a recce. I've got to make sure.
You're not even doing the right order because you're still playing Doom Eternal.
You haven't even looked at me as I'm talking to you.
There's a revenant here, and I have to remove the shoulder cannons, otherwise it's going to get me. I'm eliminating its long range capabilities.
Okay, you
here.
Have to understand, right?
Right.
That when I'm trapped in a room with one of these things, yeah. He's got to go first.
He's got to go.
Because if I'm killing imps and I'm killing, you know, all these, like, low-range guys, right?
How does this play into the work you're doing? Oh, well, this is...
It's very, very important.
You've not installed any of your... You've not installed Photoshop. You've not installed... Yes. In a minute. I'm going to do that in a minute.
What I have to do is... This is a very important part of the process. I have to test the how far... I can push the machine.
Yeah, I'm actually just benchmarking right now, okay?
Okay, and so...
3 hours? Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got, coming up after this, I've got to put Cyberpunk on there. And then I've got to put The Witcher 3 on there.
Is shouting yes, suck it, periodically part of the benchmark?
It is 100% part of the benchmark.
Okay.
Because without it, how do I know the audio capabilities of my headset? You know? I'm recording a voiceover. How do I know if it's good enough?
I'm testing the max levels.
I'm just, you know, this is... You wouldn't understand. You don't work in my field.
No. Yeah, so you know, other people say 1-2-1-2. We say booyah at
you
the top
booyah.
Of our voice.
Booyah. That's how booyah. You do it. That's
I don't know last time booyah.
I can't remember the last time I said it within celebration of something.
Or unironically.
Yeah, like full, with the full oomph behind it. I don't think I've ever...
Booyah!
Booyah!
Oh, that's gone by, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's a real shame, that.
Makes me think of Limmy's period of when he's playing Overwatch and literally just doing it to wind people up. Obviously on stream.
Oh, yeah.
Just being an absolute dick about it. Just like, you know, you can pick a character who's got a teleport, right? That teleports your teammates close to the action. And obviously, you can put that on the edge of a cliff, so as they come out, just doing stuff like that. Yeah.
Whoop.
It's like,
okay.
Oh, report Limmy, and you'd just be like talking. You'd either put on this American accent that you're
doing,
so
funny.
You can kiss my ass. or this sort
that's
of thing.
So good.
Why don't you get good, Scrub? You know, like just doing stuff, like just to be like this character, absolutely wet and like doubled over laughing because they'd be getting annoyed with it and stuff.
I love when he does that because it's like. It's this perfect thing of he's obviously absolutely taking the piss and he's winding people up, but it never feels nasty. It's always just the beautifully right side of it's like what is it? It's that thing of like take yourself seriously but don't take your work seriously, right? That's what it feels like. It feels like he's like I'm doing my job properly as an entertainer.
Yeah.
So I have to, yeah, exactly. Right?
I think. Well, I also think he's good at sort of having his cake and eating it because he does push it too far. Mm. But it's so entertaining that you don't. You're like, yeah, but
yeah.
To be fair, you've entertained me. This would annoy me so much. This is on the unpleasant side of things. But it's so funny.
Yeah,
you got me. I'm laughing. I can't. You know, you've got me.
Yeah.
The other one he does like another one. He does one where he does that, which got quite famous for doing Overwatch.
Yeah.
And they say they start reporting him.
Yeah.
And he pretends to be like this, like northern character. Oh, don't do that! I'm a professional streamer. I'll lose my fucking job. Starts going like that.
That's so funny. That's too good.
You should have thought of that before you started. Yeah. Like, they think we've got him here.
That's
like,
so funny.
Before you started griefing, you should have thought of it. I'm a professional streamer. I'll lose my fucking job. And then he keeps muting because he's laughing too much at his own stupid fucking thing he's doing.
Oh my god, that's too good. Precious theme, I'll lose my fucking job.
It doesn't even make sense. He's just playing Overwatch on a thing.
I'll lose my fucking job.
It's really good.
that's not how it works.
Yeah. But they think they've got them. They're like, yes.
So good. Oh, I
so,
love that.
You know, it is broadly in defense, but also so entertaining. You can't. That I look to him a lot for, like, because I started streaming quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to simultaneously find a unique angle, but also, more importantly, do something that fits me, right?
Yeah, of course.
And I think I'm getting there. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, not to get too wanky about it, but the whole finding your voice thing when you're creating a new thing with a...
Oh, it's a huge grind, yeah.
Yeah, I want it to be me.
Yeah.
I want it to be as genuine as possible, but without being, like, overly performative or, you know, but I want it to create something a little bit new. A reason to come watch me, right? I'm basically advertising my own thing. Well, obviously, it's all part of the MJF thing right now. And I've been playing really old, wonky stuff. Like, we're talking about Time Commando.
Oh, yeah, you were telling me about all this stuff.
Yeah, this kind of mid-90s. I might be changing direction in a minute, but I'm obsessed with, like, wonky-ass early 3D.
Yeah.
And just playing it, because it is rough.
Yeah.
But also, I'm still entertained. I am still enjoying it, even though, you know, ostensibly it's not very good anymore.
No, but yeah.
But I love seeing, like, how did they do this? What were they doing, and why? Mm. And there was this kind of excitement around being able to do full 3D. So many animations are over-egged. They're so complicated, and there's no. The thing with a complicated animation is obviously modern game design knows that you've got to kind of cut frames, and there's this technique of making it look nice, but it being functional and working and feeling good at the same time, right?
Yeah.
Well, this was more like throw a punch. It's like in Little Big Adventure 2, which I also played, similar era, same company.
Yeah.
Same dev, I mean. And a punch would be like the whole wind-up, a huge wind-up, and then the throwing of the punch.
Yeah.
And then it connects, so you press something, but you wouldn't hit the thing you're hitting until like a second later.
Oh,
which is what modern game design is like.
Yeah.
Right? But it's so fascinating to play like that, and there's this like moving through water sort of feel to
God.
It.
Oh, God, yeah.
When you'd hit them and everything was weirdly analog and colliding and it feels so clumsy, but it's so... I just really enjoyed it. Nothing's like that anymore. That, the sheer novelty of that was exciting.
It's sort of like my draw to... I'm a big fan of going back and playing like old Game Boy games, and that's every Game Boy era, so like Advance, Color, and regular Game Boy, and like those sorts of... Yeah, like you're saying, like early games where it's like, I'm sort of like, how the hell... did you put all of that into there?
Yeah.
Because I can take that in my pocket. And, like, obviously now, yeah, clearly it's so different. You could play whatever you want. You know, you could play all those games on your phone right now. You could play all of them.
Yeah.
But to me, it's like the thing of going, okay, we got, like, 28 kilobytes.
Yeah.
Let's cram Metroid onto there.
Yeah.
Are you insane? why would you... Like, how is that going to be fun for anybody? And it's a blast. I love it. I especially love that. I feel like there's some... I played a little bit of the remake of that. Another Metroid 2 remake. And it's really good. But it's like... it's tricky. It's like they're really trying to capture this thing of, like, you being the hunter on this planet. And then sort of feeling a little bit like, Am I the bad guy here?
Yeah.
Am I doing the right thing? It's like, I've been assigned to go and kill a bunch of things on this planet.
Yes.
And, about halfway through, I'm like, I'm just killing animals. Am I really?
Yeah.
They were just happily chilling on this planet.
Yeah.
And here I come, and I'm just like, just stomping around, just like, yeah, all right, you got to go. You got to go.
You're out of here.
Because you're dangerous. Who says so? I don't know. They pay me. That's why. But like, absolutely, I'm very, very into that kind of cramming something on, and I guess that's why I'm obsessed with Nintendo specifically, because they're very much on withered technology is their whole ethos, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But then what's interesting about what you're talking about is that like this was cutting edge stuff.
Yeah,
that they were doing, and they're like, "How do we just make it look as?" And it was like, and you look at it now, you're like, "That was the leading edge technology. That was right at the peak."
And just things you really laugh at, like there's a giant sea monster, and it takes ages to kill him if you want to kill him.
Yeah,
but as soon as he dies, it's click, and it just disappears.
Oh yeah.
It just like there's not even animation to fade out. It just disappears. It just goes boom, and then it's not there. And it's like, I love that.
Because
it's like, well, what are we going to do? We can't animate this. It would take ages. Yeah. And it wouldn't work. And it'd be like, oh, we have to test it falling into the water properly. Or what if it falls forwards? What if this or that? So it just goes, boom.
It just disappears.
And I just fucking love
and
that.
It's like it's all so this good. Kind of beautiful workarounds of stuff. Like, I remember playing Myst. And some of that stuff. Yeah. It's like, obviously, like, now you can play Myst. You can just walk around real time in the whole world.
Yeah.
Whereas I played it and it was like, click, whoop.
Yes.
Click. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what Time Commander does. So you know that kind of weird FMV feeling of moving between spaces in Myst?
Yes.
Which is basically like what Google Street View is now when you double click, right? And
it
sort of...
Oh, and it goes like...
It's kind of that's what Myst was.
Yeah, yeah.
They blended that with 3D models on top of, a blank space with invisible walls on it.
Oh, okay.
So as you walk past a certain threshold, the FMV will play.
Oh,
the video will play on
yeah,
the top,
yeah.
So it moves.
Oh, okay.
To the next scene.
Yeah.
But it's just video kind of... It has been really hard to do, overlaid onto it. Because you can't go back.
Once you go to a room, that's it. The last room is gone?
Yeah, or even in a space, once you move past a certain threshold and the camera changes, it pans and plays that bit of FMV, you can't turn around. So if there's like a thing you didn't collect, you fucked.
Oh, that's the other thing too, yeah. Going left, right? So one of my first games was Mario... Land, Super Mario Land on the Game Boy.
Right.
You could only go right. And then I got Super Mario Land 2, and I was like, you could go left. And it just blew my mind because I was like, that was. Because, yeah, same thing. I'd be like, oh, I didn't get that thing. And I have total game FOMO. Like, I very much, when I'm playing a game and I go into, like, before I go into a new area, I'm like, did I get everything? I got to go back. It's like, that's why I stopped playing things like Fallout because I'm like, every 20 minutes, like, you are over encumbered. I'm like, oh. And I'm like, I've gotten every single clipboard,
everything.
Every little.
Yeah, just collecting.
I'm like,
loads
it could be,
shit.
It could be important. I must know.
Just hoarding like slug pace going along.
Just
It's interesting to me in general that kind of working within limits, right? It's time and time again in any field. It's proven that brings about creativity.
Yeah,
it's when you have to think around what you've got. So I credit, like, I haven't changed my camera until this year for 12 years.
Yeah.
And I used the limitations of what it is to create a style that I really like. And I went down a certain route because of that. Mm-hmm. Right? So now that informs how I make portraits and why I make them and what I love about them and what's, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm not immune from always looking at the next things up, like the Hasselblads that are like 40 grand and the Leicas that are like handheld amazing things are like 8 grand and they're just without putting a lens on thing in the first fucking place and there's like that stuff looks amazing, but like that's fine, but like, you know, that it's from working with those limitations that you get that stuff. Previous guest of the show, Luke Hebblethwaite, head of games at BAFTA, was talking on the show about there's a set of Doom Wads. I've forgotten the exact name of it, not important right now, but they are square. Each developer is given the same square box.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so you're not allowed out of this. It's pure square format.
Yeah.
Here's the guts of it. Within this space, you have to make your levels.
Okay,
And then they make, and you know, loads of people have done it and made incredible things that are all hugely different from each other, wildly different experiences within Doom of any kind you can imagine. Just using the Doom map maker, and that square format.
Yeah.
And you're not allowed to go outside of it. And it's you know, arguably given the most creativity possible out of a very old game.
Yeah.
That you'd think everything had been done with it, but they're making new things in it all the time.
It's I'm kind of obsessed with Doom because of that, right? It's like it's very lean. I always kind of look at it as like it's a very cleanly coded thing, right? And that's, you know, there's the running joke that it can run on anything. And again, it's like what you're saying about limitations. Like, I find, absolutely. If you set yourself within this, you're always going to find a creative bump around something that, like, something that kind of breaks it and fixes it at the same time to slightly go outside of those limits.
Yeah.
Or some trickery that will make it seem. And it's funny, I think, now with, you have to kind of self-impose that stuff now more so. You know, anyone can kind
of.
Get, like you said, it's like if you want to be a photographer now, you can, if you have the money, you can buy that Leica
yeah
and take those photos, and that's great, but
And I'm not saying either way is right or wrong. I think it's like it's about what you want to get out of what you're doing.
Yes.
Right? And if you feel like perhaps you want to push yourself and maybe do some more creatively interesting things, then set the restrictions.
Yeah.
And do that on yourself. But some people just love to be like, oh, no, I just want to do the thing. I find the other way far more overwhelming. I find the way of like this infinite world of like possibility.
Yeah.
To the point where sometimes I won't start something because I'm like, I could do anything. It doesn't matter.
Like, so I'm going to do nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. There's too much choice. Whereas like, I think it'd be, I always find it very interesting. The things like, I guess like why TikTok is so popular and why, although now I found out with TikTok, people are doing like full shows on there now. You could like, the recording limit is like 20 minutes now.
Oh, is it?
So people can, they're doing like little documentaries in several parts.
Yeah. Okay.
On there. Which really is funny because I feel like that really counters the whole like, everybody's got short attention spans because of TikTok. It's like, no, that's it's a new format, and some people are making long form format on a short form, app or whatever, and people are watching that in their droves. So it's not an attention span thing. It's I think it's just about, it's a new medium. How do you utilize it to get what you need out of it?
Yeah, I wonder if that's the way things are going, like, because they are, you know, putting aside the absolute mess that has been made of Twitter recently. Yeah. They've put up, I think you can do, oh, I can't remember, much longer videos now.
Yeah,
I think it's 20 minutes. You know what, I can't remember, so I'm gonna get that wrong, actually, so sorry about that. But they've put it up much longer, so you can basically watch a whole thing on Twitter. But the compression's horrible, don't really want to do that.
No.
But what I mean is that everyone seems to be, social media wise, that feels like they're trending towards longer again, maybe.
It's an ad revenue thing, right? So it's like, obviously after a certain threshold they can put ads in, and so that's why they want to do it. Yes. Right? That's why they do it on YouTube, obviously. And like, so they're pushing towards it because they've realized that short form don't sell, the short form don't make money. But again, it's like it's about fitting that restriction to your needs. Sure, you could have a 20-minute limit, but that's a long time. How do you fill that? If that's not what your format is. And also, I personally think that those things like TikTok and stuff, I don't think you can, it's not a thing that you can kind of make money from. At least this is what people I know who've done very successful and have told me. It's like, it's not really a money spinner,
right?
In the respect of like how YouTube is. It's not like, it's more like a get eyeballs on your brand,
right?
And then bring them to what it is that you're doing. Yes. And I say brand, I'm talking about this in the most callous kind of way.
But that's how it's thought of as. Yeah, for sure. We understand that's part of the language now, even if we don't necessarily fully buy into it, sat here thinking, but how is this affecting my brand?
Yeah, it's...
But it has become the language, but you might call it something, I personal identity, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
It's there, isn't it? So that working with limitations thing, if you think about if you're learning how to drive a car, people say like, you want to learn in a banger.
Yeah.
As if like a shitty one, not like a banger.
Oh, we're going to banger, mate.
Banger brackets bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that when you do finally buy a nice car, you'll appreciate it and you'll appreciate why it's good.
Yes.
And you'll take full advantage. I'm not a driving person, but you'll take full advantage of what's there.
I know exactly. Yeah, I had a really shitty car. I had a car accident actually, and then I bought a nicer car.
Oh really?
And I was like, yeah. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes, exactly. So it's like the same with creative tools and technology wise. You're not going to be aware of what it can do, and you probably won't use it properly because you're not thinking about what you want to get out of it.
Yeah.
But, I'm going to pivot. I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
Get ready. When it comes to writing, which you do a lot of, that is, I would say, broadly technology independent, right?
It's not.
So, how are you putting limitations on yourself when you want to write something to get to a goal? When you, as you say earlier, you could basically do anything when you start.
It depends on what I'm doing, but if it's like stand-up, for example, obviously it'll be the time restriction of the set that you're doing.
Yeah.
If you're doing like a new material spot, it'll be like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So fitting, and then also it's like the limitations of what you're writing effectively as a joke, right? Because the limitation will kind of be the germ of the idea.
Yeah.
Different for different people, but like the germ of the idea and the setup around the idea. that varies in length for different people, but yeah. Let's say it falls in, a new joke for me falls in at around a minute.
Okay.
Right? And that's not something that I've done on purpose. That's just like, that's probably how long it takes for me to set up and deliver that idea. And then it becomes whether, yeah, the limitation is sort of how much, it's like I keep working on it. I'm like, I guess that's all I can get out of it until I can test it.
Okay.
And then I test it, and then I'm like, okay, from that point, I'm like, does it need to be longer? Does it need to be more information for the audience to get it?
Yeah.
Does it need to be less? And then tweak it from there.
Yeah.
But usually it's a time constraint of your set. And then the joke can lengthen from there, but it still has to be in the confines of whatever the length of your set is, be it 10 minutes, 20 minutes, an hour if you're doing a show.
Yeah.
And how much you want to talk on the subject, or how much you can get out of the subject matter. So sometimes some of that is baked into the what you're doing.
Yes.
And that sometimes you'll be working on a bit and you'll be like, oh, I can't get anything else out of this now.
Okay.
I've gone as far as I can go with this idea. So then there's that. With something like the stuff for Mashed, for example, there's a restrictive limit of like, I think it's like 6 minutes is the length of their sketches.
Right.
As long as they get. So I've got to make it all work in 6 minutes.
Okay.
Unless we start doing, and this is something that has happened on several occasions when I've written something for them, a multi-parter. And I'm like, oh, okay. Which is lovely. They're really great because then we get to expand the story.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes, and that's what usually happens, specifically more so for me with, and I guess it sort of happens with stand-up as well. It's like you sort of overwrite it and then you're trimming it back. So I guess if we're going to talk about the workflow specifically, whereas I'm saying about that minute thing or the 10-minute thing, it's like initially you kind of overshoot it. And then you trim it back to economize it and get to what you need to say.
Yes.
Quicker, right? And so, and I find that more inherent with script stuff because I just let, you know, draft. So I go draft zero, then first draft. And draft zero is the one where I'm just like, bleh, everything.
Uh-huh.
And like draft zero usually sucks a lot.
Mm.
And then I go over draft zero and I go, okay, yeah, I'll take that out. That kind of doesn't work. That doesn't make sense. Tweak a few things and send off draft one. And draft one will usually be longer than the 6 minute mark.
Okay.
It'll be like 8 minutes. And then because the guy I work with, Ben, is really good, he'll kind of go, okay, well, and we'll back and forth of what we need to lose and what doesn't make sense. And I, over the years, have gotten a slightly better idea of what works for their audience.
Right.
And what to keep and what to lose. And I think, yeah, you sort of get an instinct for it. But I think, yeah, writing, there are some self-imposed things. It's like writing a book, again, is another one. It's like a novel is like what? I mean, it's... Ooh, hang on. That's fantastic. Nice. It's a man having an argument.
The Sounds of London.
I guess a novel could be as long as you want, but you're not James Joyce. You're only writing like the 10,000-page
thing. Exactly.
So, like, yeah, there's a self-imposed thing with certain mediums, I feel like, you know, that kind of happens with. And I do it mostly on paper. With scripts, I have to do on computer because I just know I'm sitting there formatting it on paper.
Yeah.
But with jokes specifically for stand-up, I like to do it on paper at least first and then record it. And then I have this whole other workflow where I record it and then I use dictation software to upload it and then I highlight what's funny and then I cross out what's not.
Are you ever recording ideas on dictaphone and saying, like, just letting the idea of a joke that comes into your head play out and then refining it afterwards?
I used to do that a lot more. I'm sort of trying to lean back into that now. I haven't for a while. I like that because I used to do that a lot more when I was driving, because I just do a dictaphone and
trying to avoid the Alan Partridge thing, like idea for a show.
Oh yeah.
I always feel like that if I ever like,
absolutely yeah if I've got something
into a dictaphone, like I cannot avoid or ignore that. It's just built into my soul that show in general,
so yeah.
Just to be like, am I doing that? It's like, shit, no.
But then everybody's talking on their phones or talking into something or making a video now, so it's like you don't look out of place doing it now.
No.
And so I've that's kind of why I stopped as well, the similar thing where I'm like, oh, I'm such an idiot. But it doesn't matter now. It's like, and I think...
No, of course. It really doesn't. But it's that thing where you look at... I think we've got like notes apps that go back like 10 years or whatever. And you find a really old one. You maybe searching for something else. And something comes up from like 2010. And you're like...
idea for a show. Did I have to write it?
And you're like, what the fuck? That's terrible. It doesn't make any sense. Who wrote this shit? It's really funny, but like, it's just one of those things, isn't it? But writing jokes first. I want to ask some specific things about writing jokes. Okay. To my head.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm presuming there's a difference between your writing. So, some things that I can think of that are different ways of writing jokes, right? Writing an opener.
Yeah.
Writing a joke or writing a bit that's part of a, as you say, 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Or writing something that you know is going to be part of 30 minutes. Writing a joke that you can drop in to any set if it's just there, if you feel like dropping it in, or like something you can use anywhere.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's an isolated thing that just pops in somewhere. Say if you lose your place.
Oh, yeah.
And you need something to do while you're finding your own, getting your place back.
Yes, yeah, 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 okay.
What are those processes different to writing those different types of jokes? And do you do that in a conscious way, or is that just this could be a filler, or this could be a rescuer, or whatever?
I guess I'll only talk on my experience of it. And so it's sort of, I think, so with an opener, it's like I guess that's like, I didn't used to have an opener, and then, you know, in the last, I mean, obviously years and years and years ago, I was like, oh no, I should write something to introduce who I am and why I sound like this and why I look like this.
So you never had an opener?
No, for years I would just go up and people were like, is he going to explain why he sounds like that and dresses like that? And I'm like, no. And then I'd move on and they'd be like, it's bugging us. And so eventually I was like, okay, because actually it was another comic who took me to one side and he's like, do you ever tell them why? I'm like, no. And he's like, that's stupid. You should really, really explain
just fully like
why you do that, why you sound like that. And I was like, oh, okay. And then you sort of, and so that evolved from that. And I think it's like, it's a nice thing to kind of, especially if you're doing a shorter set to kind of, and that evolves over time, right?
Yeah.
To how you introduce yourself.
Yeah.
And then I think everything else, like you're saying, it's like they, I think they, for me, intentionally, they start intentionally isolated because there's other stuff that's interconnected. And that interconnectivity has happened over a long time of moving things around.
Yeah.
So everything will sort of start out slightly disjointed. And maybe you'll find some sort of weak way of connecting them.
Right.
And then you'll be like, and then this thing. And then you'll sort of arrange them mildly thematically. Yeah. Or at least I do. And I'm like, I guess they kind of all make sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And then over time, you'll jig things around, partly for boredom, but partly because you're like, I guess maybe that, as the bit evolves and you write more to it, something emerges and you go, actually, that feels like that connects more with this other thing. And maybe if we move that around there. And then they all kind of start to, again, this is only my process. Everyone has different things. But it's like they start to kind of flow. For me, they flow a little bit more. And then I go, okay, that's interesting. That works more. And then then a new bit comes along and that's isolated for me. And then I'm like, okay, where does that fit? How does that?
Yeah.
And then sometimes you'll write something that you go, well, again, this is mildly within the same. So I've got this new thing about that my memory is going because I have two kids. And like at the moment the setup is sort of roughly, it's really, really new idea, but it's like, you know, I there's stuff in my head that I have no need for. Like I could quote the entirety of Back to the Future, but the other day when I was talking to my partner, I forgot my son's name.
Yeah.
She's like, you know, and I was like, yeah, you know, the flux capacitor, I don't know, is there are two guys in our house and one of them is me, okay? So like, what do you want from me? You know who I'm talking about.
You know who I'm talking about. Yeah, I like that.
But it's like it's at the moment it's nestled somewhere between me talking about having kids.
Yeah.
But and it so again, it's like it mildly thematically fits into stuff, but it's like there is like part of me is like also I like being economical, but I also like things to have some sort of flow and feel nice movement-wise rhythmically in comedy for me. So it's like trying to find a way to make it feel nice to go into that idea.
Without seeming like you've done it on purpose.
Yeah.
Or, well, you know what I mean, like without it being too clunky. And you sort
exactly.
Of
but then sometimes that clunky is nice, and I think sometimes to get to that you have to make it quite deliberately like abrasive. In terms of just like, and then I'm moving into this thing.
Yes, I've noticed because a lot of like, you see a lot of stand-ups have that sort of, there's a technique where they literally just, you're pacing around, you finish what you're saying, and it's like 10 seconds of just not so silence.
Yeah.
Which sort of, I think it's partly to, I mean, obviously you can tell me if I'm talking up my ass.
Mm-hmm.
It's partly to sort of display a degree of confidence where you're like,
oh,
I'm happy, I'd
agree with that.
I'm happy to leave 10 seconds of silence because I don't need to be making life 100 miles a minute.
Mm.
So this is just loads of people do it now. It's quite common, right? You'll just do the bit, they'll pause, and it is literally 10 seconds of nothing, and it's a new subject.
Yeah, because I think also that's how conversation works, right?
Yeah.
That's the other thing, is like occasionally you'll be talking to someone, you'll laugh or whatever, and da da da. And one of you will go, oh, this thing. And because your brain is always jumping around and making connections. It's like we were talking earlier about the Street Fighter sound thing. And I'm gonna say this and then go back to your point. When you said about arcades, I was like, oh yeah, I remember the exact thing you were talking about was like smoking, except ours was upstairs. There was an arcade that we were not allowed to go in as kids.
Oh.
You had to be 16 and over.
Oh,
and the second we turned 11, we're like, fuck this, let's go up. Yes. And we went up there, and it was like, but it was those old school city down ones that were like the white machines, the white bright plastic machines. And it was
ashtrays
a city down.
Built into the cabinet.
And it was, and there was, yeah, like, you know, this was on, so I lived on this tiny island, and this was a very, very small arcade. It was probably, oh gosh, it was tiny. I wouldn't know dimension wise, but basically it had about maybe 10 cabinets in there.
Okay.
But they were still playing at full blast.
Yes.
And you go in there, you're just like, no wonder they don't want anyone to...
Because everyone's like, come to my machine. Yeah. That's where the attract mode comes from. Like,
exactly.
That screen is to get you to go and chuck your coin in it. Right?
Yeah. But yeah, to go back to what you're saying, it's like, yeah, there's that confidence, absolutely. The 10 seconds of confidence of like, yep. And then move on to the next point. I also think it was a piece of advice somebody gave me a while ago. I did some course and they were saying like, yeah, when you go on stage, an interesting thing to do is like, don't say anything for a few seconds. Just go up.
Yeah.
And just stand there.
Yeah.
And
then
be like, hey. Because it's like, it's that thing where it's like, oh, they're fine. They're fine with the silence.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's good. And especially see that. That feels like if you have a surreal comedian or an offbeat comedian, they might do that. Look, come on. We'll give you like 8 seconds to soak in what they look like.
Yeah.
And then they'll say an unexpected weird thing. And that's a good opener to just be like,
yeah. It's another thing as well is like, if a bit doesn't go quite as planned, then the silence is fine too if you just like leave it for a second and then move on to the next thing. Because the weird thing is obviously they don't know where you had written the joke and you're trying to find to give them. So if you say something that just sounds like you're making a point, they don't sit there and go like, hang on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was supposed to be a joke.
Yeah.
If you just leave it, they're like, okay, fine. And again, there's various things as to whether that, you know, if people want to make, you know, draw attention to it or not. But that's always a fun thing of... Again, it can be utilized in that way, too.
Thinking about you saying about writing this bit about, you know, you've got two kids, your memory's dying.
Yeah.
Which is, very relatable, isn't it? When it comes to writing, because that's very, you know, talking about your kids is a very saturated subject now, right?
Yeah.
How do you find new angles on how you weave that in? Because obviously, you've got two kids, it's going to be part of your life, it's going to be part of what you're talking about. Part one of the question: how do you find fresher ways of coming in and out of that sort of topic?
Yeah.
And number two: how important is it to you in your stand up to be like, right, I have to make sure that the first thing I do is make sure that this is a new thing that's been talked about. How important is the originality?
So, I guess like everything, there is that. The originality specifically, and I'm talking very, kind of broadly, so I'm going to answer that firstly broadly. It's like, you know, there's a lot of things that haven't... Everyone's done something on everything.
Yes.
And so the unique angle is me and how I'm experiencing it. And hopefully within the stuff that I haven't talked about kids in my opening section, or if I have even just a little bit, there's enough uniqueness there. Because, you know, like, everyone's life is very different.
Yeah.
Even this, like, you know, I talk about my mom a lot, and my mom was a very strict parent growing up. And there's a lot of comics that have that about strict parents, about being, you know, hit by their parents or whatever. And it's like, it's not particularly original, but everyone's spin on it is something.
Yes.
And that's what's going to be the fun thing. It's like, and so then for me, initially, I try not to think about that because I will eventually, there's a trusting in the process that eventually it will lead to this fun new idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, it's about kind of the, pushing it within the yeah exactly, pushing yourself to kind of go past that quite, some would say hacky, I guess. It's like, and there's a thing a lot of comics talk about, it's like, I don't think there's like, there is such a thing as a hack subject, I think. I feel like things like airplane food are pretty hacky.
Yeah. But also, by the same token, I would be really interested to see someone go,
do a new take on airplane food. That's it. It's like, and I think it's like, and then that's, I guess I'm kind of going back on my point. Exactly. It's like, actually, it's quite nice to see. It's like, oh, okay, you're going to talk about your kids. Well, let's see what you have to say about this, because that then, yeah. So there's always kind of a space for someone to bring something new. And even if it is fairly trite, something quite enjoyable about that as well.
Yeah.
But I think initially you always try to, or I guess I always try to think about what's a funny, interesting thing for me, or something that's happened that I can push and play with. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a good question.
whose chat was it? It was Bilal Zafar's Twitch chat, right? And they were talking in the chat about, I can't remember who it was, talking about a comedian, about how they're being a good storyteller, or they have good stories to tell.
Yeah.
Anyway, the details are inconsequential. But I made the point that you don't necessarily have to have really interesting things happen to you, or go to places where stuff happens that is, you know, extraordinary.
Yes.
It's because that can still happen to you, but if you can't tell a good story,
well, it's pointless,
right?
You
won't engage the person. So it's, you can have fuck all happen to you, but you tell the story. It was Greg Davis.
Oh, yes.
Because they said, oh, he's got all these mad stories. And I'm like, when you look at what they actually are, the kind of stories that everyone's got is, I've got a weird aunt who said a weird thing.
Yeah.
Or I've got a slightly racist brother-in-law.
Right. Yeah.
But he builds up to it. It's how he tells it.
Yes.
How he dresses it.
Yeah.
All the things he does. You know, he's quite, you know, a bit of, I don't know if I'm a comedy nerd in terms of knowing everything about it, but I like to think about it.
Yeah.
And he often does that technique where he'll cover his mouth with his hand.
Oh,
it's
yes.
a funny image because he's such a massive bloke.
Yeah.
And he does this almost sort of what you might call like girlish feminine.
Yeah,
like
it's quite a small, the gesture counters what we're seeing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what's so, that's good storytelling. Yeah. That's good. That's
and
good,
he'll do that kind of
performance.
I'm calling this and it's making me laugh thing.
Yeah.
And that's sort of a thing that is quite common where he's laughing at his own thing that's about to happen, even though you've told it every night for 60 nights, right? But doing it well is difficult. And so all that dressed around what is essentially, I don't know, I can't think of a specific thing from him, but like my mother-in-law once said, don't steal my tampons. Yeah, I know it's you.
And I'm
whatever.
Like, I don't get no respect.
You know, and it's everything around that small bit of material that's what's important. Right?
So it's interesting. There is, in fact, you said that there's one instance in which not very early on, but a good few years ago, I had a couple of crazy stories that I told on stage.
Yeah.
And like you're saying, it's like, I didn't, they were, the stories themselves were quite mad.
Yeah.
And there's a point of believability, I think, that the audience, this is slightly related. I guess what you're saying is more about like technique, right?
Yes.
And I think you're right. It's like you can take something fairly mundane and turn it into something quite brilliant, which a lot of very good comics in this country do.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I was of the understanding, it's like, no, you got to have mad stuff happen to you. It's like, no. Start small and then you can build that to becoming crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is, like, there's a point of believability, right, where sometimes if you tell too much, they stop believing you.
Yeah, for sure.
Because they go, well, hang on a minute. No. I used to have a bit about how when I first moved into this flat share, there was this mad guy I lived with who, like, threatened to cut my head off or something.
Right.
And, which is true. And then, like, a few nights later, we had a bonfire in our backyard, like a big bonfire.
Yeah.
In our backyard. And I brought some random people home, and he told one of them, he's like, hey, we should cut your head off and put it in the fire. I'm not going to tell you his name because I feel like I'm definitely indicting this guy. And I can't remember how the bit went, but some story on stage about this guy, about how like living in London is insane. You move in with these crazy people. And the audience stopped believing me because they were too far. They sounded like I made them up to be crazy.
Right.
And it's like, I mean, the bits weren't very good as well. That's a very fine, let's really also hammer that point home that they were not very well written.
They didn't believe that was that.
They
was
don't
the
believe
case.
It. And it's like, it's a thing where it's like, well, I could have taken one very small mundane thing and made that, because that's crazier, right? If you take something smaller and blow that up. So yeah. Like, I think, what was it? There was one thing where something to do with, like, I think I left like a bunch of, it was communal milk, and I left the milk in the, like, really low.
Yeah.
And we had like a house meeting about it, and like that alone is like, okay, maybe this is boring subject matter, but like if I talked about that, for example, and expanded that, it's like, even the very words house meeting make me feel sick to my stomach.
Yes.
And I hate the thing of like, okay, so we're all gonna sit together and pretend like none of us wanted to just throttle each other because one of us did something really annoying.
Yeah, I suppose, and I suppose the angle there, you taking that boring detail, like there's almost no milk left and we had a house meeting. Like,
yeah.
That's funny in itself, that like such an inconsequential thing, which is like fucking relaxed.
Yeah.
Required, necessitated.
Everyone to sit around.
This giant fucking like meeting, like it's world leaders on the war table.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, it's
and
like,
you can go from there, right? With something like
exactly.
That.
Yeah. So we all got to sit around and we've all got to sit there and like, okay, well, we call to order. Yeah, exactly. You could do it, take it a number of ways where like one person takes it really seriously and they're they have like a conch shell that has to be passed around to make sure that everybody
hold the shell while you
there's this black and white film you said that and it's like there's I make time for that exact same thing where I'm like, right, I'm gonna take in some culture, take in some art, get inspired.
Yeah.
And I've never watched this film, but I've seen it pop up and it's like in that kind of there's a level of art house and that type of stuff that I really can't bear.
Yes.
And so there's this film, I can't remember what it's called, basically it's set on a medieval planet, it's in black and white, so it's in the far future, this astronaut ends up on this medieval planet and it's still just 2 hours of like of just kind of, it's quite grim. There's people like, there's a lot of what was the one of the reviews on IMDb, is like, if you like liquid, there's lots of it here. There's blood and
it's
shit.
It's like
and
a
70s,
60s thing. Yeah, there's a whole thing that art house was just grotesque things in a row, right?
It's very in your face, and like, there's lots of people who are just kind of like, quite horrible, just looking at the camera, and you're like, what is, I feel like the film is almost challenging you to watch it, like, want art house? I want you to be screaming, fuck you, when you're watching.
Also,
movie,
a lot of, like, exploitative, like, let's get in the dwarf, let's get in someone with facial disfigurements.
Yeah, absolutely.
And let's make them, like, bite a tit. You know what I mean? Whilst some sort of low drone comes under the bottom, and they're like, there you go.
That's exactly...
That's subversive.
That's exactly the vibe they're going
and
for.
And no one dares question the director, because they're like, you just don't understand it, man. It's just a vehicle for him to do weird shit in his spare time and get paid for it.
Oh my god.
you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. It's absolutely that.
Let's and use this chicken blood we got to throw it around.
We'll just cover everybody in it.
Yeah, just well, lie in it.
How much of it do you
How much am I getting paid again? Paid?
Just lie in it.
Yeah.
Just lie in it. What's going to happen? Then we're going to dump about 5 tons of mud on top of you.
Yeah.
Why are we doing this? Why are we doing it?
Well, you're dressed as Jesus. You're going to cry.
Because it's meaningful.
That bit shouldn't be too hard.
Because it's about struggle. It's about... Yeah. It's like, couldn't we have some dialogue?
About your struggle.
About that. No. I think it's important that I cover you in chicken blood. And then I dump a whole bunch of mud on top of you. Should I be screaming anything? Anything you like, really. I mean,
you will be screaming.
You will be. Because to be honest, it's quite a horrible situation to put you in. So the more raw, the better would be great. I feel like there has to be a crossover point with those directors where they just like, they're like, are they really doing what I asked them to do? I'm just going to have them stand in the rain for 4 hours.
Yeah. Fucking
but
hell.
I can't. It's but those like there's that was it that Russian director who made a film over the course of like 20 years, but he was filming it and the film's like 6 hours long, and people like had to assume these roles for like 10 years, and like, you know, they didn't go home to their their families, and then they like they made new relationships, and like they lived entire
yeah,
lives.
Yeah.
And they rapped, and everyone's like, "What? I'm a different person now."
Can't rap.
You can't. You can't. It's over. So yeah. Well,
it's terrific.
Just ridiculous.
It's just not needed.
No,
creativity.
But there's again, it's like there's that perhaps the flip side of that thing where you can just go on forever, right? Is that what happens when you? When you're like, well, I'll just do whatever I want. There's sort of no confines. It's like, or maybe there is. Maybe he's like, I want to make a 12-hour movie, but 6 hours feels like the right length. And how am I going to make a 6-hour movie? I'm going to film it for 10 years. You know, I don't know. It's a hard thing to say because like I just, it's not my art house. There's a level of art house where I draw the line. Where I'm like, no, thank you. That is
very fair.
I don't think games have ever crossed that threshold though that are too no in saying that there are visually there is I played Manifold Garden, which is sort of like a portal like and I don't like saying that because I feel like that's quite cruel, but it's a first person puzzle game, so I'll use that terminology.
Yep.
But it's visually quite it's quite dizzying. And I know that's like that's the art style, so it's kind of not their fault, but it's a little bit I'm a bit like okay.
Yeah.
I guess that's a... But a lot of people love that game, so...
Yes. But no, I do feel you. There's something I'm going to start playing called Indica.
Oh, yeah.
It's just come out, which is... I don't know entirely what it's about yet. It's a very mad kind of...
Okay.
It is art housey, but with comedy in it. And it's got a slight vibe of like... They present it almost like a Wes Anderson style. Not in sort of visual colours, but there's something about the offbeatness of it that has a vibe of that. Definitely not the visual style.
No.
But it's about a nun dealing with a guilt, but it's mad. And it's got all kinds of genres in it. There's 8-bit things that suddenly come in. But it's third person 3D, but like really... going for a realistic vibe on the graphics, but also loads of weird comedy in there, and there's just a bit with a soldier going, "The cloistress is here," and she goes, a nun is fine.
Yeah.
It's just like stuff like that in there. Then it'll cut to like a world building bit, and then there's cut to like a weird 8-bit platformer bit, and it's all over the place in a really kind of wild way.
Yeah.
But it looks fun as well as it's supposed to be quite dark at the same time. So I'm really interested to get that. I'm going to start streaming that.
Yeah.
But so I'm interested to see how that pans out and what that looks like as a. I wouldn't call it an anti-game, but do you know these sorts of things that are starting to come out like this? Another game on the horizon called Baby Steps.
Oh, yes. We've talked very briefly about this, but
we've talked about it before,
Not in your show, but we've talked about it outside of this,
And the fact that the trailer has, it's a co-op sort of vibe thing by the guy who did Getting Over It with Bennett Foddy. And it's that same thing of finding it hard to move, but it's associated with this guy who's a loser who still lives at home and hasn't bothered to move out, and he's like mid-30s or whatever, and he just can't be asked doing anything with his life, and he gets sucked into the screen. Since realizing that it's an Another World reference, if you know the intro to Another World, he suddenly gets teleported to a different world.
Yeah.
But it's about him, I think, because I haven't seen anything, it seems to be about him confronting his get on, do something with your life. And just messing up everyone else's life, and he can barely walk.
Yeah. It was kind of like, like I'm Getting Over It was about getting at the grief of his breakup.
So and it's just an interesting scene that in the trailer where he runs into this guy who knocks his cairn over and he gets pissed off at him, and it seems to be an improv comedy scene where they've then animated over the top of it the slight corpsing and stuff, and he's like, I said, "Oh, sorry, I think I overbalanced it." And it's like, it was like an Aussie. Yeah, he seemed to have fucking overbalanced it there, and he just like a mind kicking it thing. But he does it with a slight laugh in there. And it's like, I see you later, wanker. It's just a really good something about that kind of slightly deflated tone to something, the real, a pathos tone.
Yeah. I think that's kind of a fun.
Those things are interesting to me.
That's an interesting, like, as you were saying about the genre jumping thing. I've seen that a handful of times in games, and so one I think it works really well in is Frog Fractions. Have you ever played that?
No, but I know everything about it, as it were.
And that's like an interesting sort of comedy game in that, like, everything it does very well, and it jumps all over the place. And that's like a really, really difficult thing to do, I feel, to carry it off very well.
Yeah.
And then I know that Brutal Legend did it too, slightly. But with Brutal Legend, it went... there was like, it was a sense of progression within the game in terms of the character's journey, and each of those genre changes made sense contextually. And a lot of people didn't like that aspect of it. I was like, that's a pretty bold thing to do in like a what was, or at least slated to be, some sort of double A title at the very least.
Yeah. With a big name in it.
With a big name in it, with Jack Black in it. And made by Double Fine, you know.
Yeah. Yes.
So it was like, this was lining up to be a big one. And it's like, I like when people take bold moves like that. This is another thing about, I guess, like, if you're talking about writing, and specifically with games and I guess anything, it's like, you got to take those bold swings.
Yeah.
Because, why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And like, otherwise, then you're just kind of going to just be trapped in, that's another confined thing of like, you can kind of also just trap yourself in your own little comfortable, like, no, I'll just keep doing this. Yeah. And it's like, no, you got to push yourself, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's stepping outside of that confined thing. Sometimes I think it's good to go a little, something you don't think you can do. It's like, that's why I kind of want to, because I've only ever done two long form shows.
Right.
I'd like to do another one.
Okay.
Because it's extremely uncomfortable having to write a long show.
Right.
And I want to get back in that thing of like slightly being not quite touching the bottom of like, okay, fuck, I've got to fill this time now.
Do you think that's what you'll do next then, write a long form show?
Probably. I'd like to do it again. I like the process of it. And I think also I want to do it trusting my instincts more. I feel like the first two times I don't know if I did.
Okay.
And I'd like to do it again. But then I think the problem I'm having now is like, to go back to the confines thing, it's like, so like you have Edinburgh, every comic has Edinburgh to do that with, where they go like, oh, I'm going to do Edinburgh, and you have, you know, a year to do that.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm like, I could do it any time, really.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and then that's what puts me off, rather than going, oh, actually, you know what? Why don't I book in a date really far in advance and go like, the show is happening then.
Yes.
And I have between now and then to write this show.
Yes.
And maybe I might do that. I might like book it in a date like next year.
Yes.
And then be like, right, okay, well, everything's working in service to that, which would be fun. That, and I've downloaded Inkle, the game engine.
Ah, yeah.
And that's something I keep threatening to make something with. I think that's a fun engine. It's mostly written, it's what they used to make 80 Days and Overboard.
Mm.
And it's a fun engine because it's just written, right? So it's like, that's very easy. I don't have to hire anybody. I just have to make a really good story. And that would be kind of fun. And I guess I also... I don't know if you have this, where I'll start something to threaten myself to do something, and then I won't. So like, I got a Substack recently, and I'm like, right, okay, I cook a lot. Maybe I'll do a food blog.
Yeah.
I haven't done anything with it. Yeah. So I'm going to start that. So I've got three things, potential things. You know, already. One of them will happen, or all of them will happen. I don't know.
Already too many.
It's already too many. They're all very big projects.
Literally the same thing I do.
Yeah. But I think at least the food one, I cook every day for my family. So that's something I could at least incorporate into my life. And do that thing that George does. George Osborne, not that one, friend of the show.
It's not that one, friend of the show.
who does his weekly game thing where he was telling me, he's like, and then I've got a release tomorrow. I gotta write it. And
you're
like,
it. Yeah.
Hey, that's it.
It's People are waiting for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay.
Give yourself those.
And once, you know, it's food, so everyone has an angle. It's like, I think there's a lot of scope in Kenyan food or African food specifically, because I feel like that's not you don't have a lot of big African food places. I mean, you have like Nigerian food and stuff.
Yeah.
And Ethiopian food. But I feel like it's not as big as it could be, right? There's whole parts of Africa that aren't, they don't have the same kind of pull and tug as like Chinese food or Korean food.
There's
or whatever.
There's space there, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, well, that'd be an interesting thing to see people dig like that.
You need to get to the sculptor's stone. Get on the
absolutely.
Stone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Start chipping, my man.
Start chipping. Start
see
chipping
that? On. See that beautiful statue in the corner?
Ah, yes, with a T-shirt on.
That's with the T-shirt right around it. Yeah.
I hope one day to make something so that's ubiquitous and so beautiful that someone will throw a T-shirt over it.
That's the goal.
That's the goal.
But first, some food.
Some food. Eat absolutely. Some food. Let's eat some food.
Right one.
Yeah.
Let's go. Thank you, boy.
You're very welcome.
Let's cheers the mics.
Hey.
Cheers.
Ooh, cheers.